All right, tonight's exercise I hope will seem easy to you. Not because it's easy to look at a bunch of slides, which is what you really have to do, because that's not necessarily easy. But hopefully it'll seem easy because it's all review at this point. We've covered all this in lecture. It's just a matter of looking at specific examples. And I even gave you pictures in lecture, so I'm not going to bother to do that again. I'm just going to maximize the time that you have to look at it. There's no new information, really. We've covered all of this. But just for the sake of hearing myself talk, we'll have a quick review of histology. So there are how many human tissue types?
Four.
Four primary categories of tissue. What are those? Right, epithelial, connective, nervous, and muscle. And what is special about muscle and nervous tissue? It is excitable. What does that mean? Correct. Excitable tissues are able to generate and propagate or transmit action potentials. By the way, in nervous tissue, which is excitable tissue, there are two types of cells, two major categories of cells, only one of which is capable of transmitting action potentials. Which one is that? Neurons are specifically excitable within that tissue. What's the other category of nervous tissue cells? Neuroglia, correct. And that's a big category because there's several different kinds of neuroglia. But none of them is excitable. They don't actually produce the action potentials. They exist to, in one way or another, support the neurons. So there are different categories depending on what specifically they are doing and where they are in the nervous system. There are different neuroglia in the central nervous system, for instance, compared to the peripheral nervous system. And what's the distinction? What is the central nervous system? It's the brain and the spinal cord combined. The rest of the nervous system, besides those two, which connects to that central nervous system, is the peripheral nervous system. But anyway, histologically, you have neuroglia of several kinds, and we'll talk about those kinds in a different chapter. And you have neurons. Neurons are the excitable ones. In muscle tissue, the cells are muscle cells, or myocytes, and those are all excitable cells. But there are how many types of muscle tissue? Three. What are those? Smooth muscle, skeletal muscle, and cardiac muscle. Correct. Now, which of those is striated? Skeletal and cardiac are both considered to be striated muscle. And so they have those striations, those little bands in them. And it's easier to see the striations when you look at a slide of skeletal muscle, and that's because skeletal myocytes, or muscle cells, are unbranched cylinders with blunt ends, and they're all lined up in the same direction within a muscle. So the striations are all going in the same direction. It's easy to see them. In cardiac muscle, the cells are also cylindrical. They don't taper at their ends. They're blunt ends, just like in skeletal muscle, but cardiac myocytes branch, and so the branches go off in a slightly different direction, and therefore the striations aren't all lined up with each other. They are both striated, though, because of how the molecules inside those cells interact with each other, which we'll talk about in the third unit in lecture. That happens a little bit differently in smooth muscle. It uses a different mechanism to contract, and therefore smooth muscle is not striated. Also, smooth muscle is shaped differently. It's so-called spindle-shaped, meaning that it's thicker in the middle and then it tapers at the ends. So when you see these pointed ends, that's a good thing to look out for, to see that you're looking at smooth muscle. You can also distinguish the muscle types because of how they work differently. And so some of them are voluntary, some of them are involuntary. Voluntary means that it's up to you whether or not they contract. Right? So what kind of muscle is voluntary?
Skeletal muscle.
In other words, your biceps brachii muscle will contract if you create an action potential in your brain that will send a signal to that muscle. And you can consciously control whether your skeletal muscles will contract or relax. That's not true for cardiac muscle and smooth muscle. You can't just decide to stop your heartbeat. You can't just decide to stop the peristalsis in your gut. That's happening involuntarily behind the scenes. It's a good thing because you don't have to remember to beat your heart if you look at it the other way, or you don't have to remember to push digestive contents through your digestive tract throughout the day. There's enough to think about consciously. So that's the distinction between voluntary and involuntary. But there's also the distinction between being able to contract on their own or not. Skeletal muscle cannot contract on its own, which means it only will contract if a neuron that innervates it, connects to it, sends an action potential to it. If that doesn't happen, the skeletal muscle will stay relaxed. On the other hand, the other two types of muscle tissue, cardiac and smooth, can contract on their own, although they're also innervated. So the nervous input can control how quickly or how strenuously they contract. But both of those types of muscle also can contract just on their own without any action potentials being sent from the neurons. What do we call that property? The ability to contract on their own. No, that's voluntary means that you consciously control them. And so they're not. You don't consciously control your heart or your smooth muscle. The ability to contract on their own without nervous input is called autorhythmicity. They are autorhythmic, meaning they can contract themselves. There's another difference is that skeletal muscle cells are multinucleate, a single muscle cell for skeletal muscle. First of all, it's enormously long for a cell. It's the full length of whatever the length of the muscle is. One cell goes all the way from tendon to tendon. And multinucleate means that it has a bunch of nuclei along that length. And that's because they start out as individual cells, that each with one nucleus, and then those cells fuse together, leaving multiple nuclei along the way. Epithelial tissue, we've gone over pretty exhaustively in lecture already, so you should already be familiar with how to categorize epithelia. Remember that you have to categorize them in two different ways. You have to categorize them as, first of all, being simple or stratified, and then once you make that decision, you further classify them as being squamous, cuboidal, columnar, and combine the names of those. Okay. By the way, when you look for epithelium on a slide, you know, when you look at the pictures in the book, which are important, you need to study those pictures. They're already pointing to exactly what they want you to see in those pictures. On a real slide, it might be labeled simple cuboidal epithelium, but that's not the only thing that's going to appear in that slide. You have to find the part of the slide that features the epithelium, because there might be a bunch of connective tissue that it's connected to, all right, which isn't the point of the slide. So whenever you're supposed to be looking at an epithelium on a slide, you should look for the free surface. You should look for white space somewhere, because an epithelium always has a free surface, the apical surface that's not attached to anything, right? Now, it can be a ring of cells forming a hollow lumen if you cut a tube, for instance, and it's lined by epithelium, but that would look white to you on the slide, and then that layer of cells would be the epithelium. Or it could be a layer of cells on one edge, and then there's nothing past that. It's a big white space. But look for the white space. That's a good way of telling that you're looking at the epithelial cells and not being confused by what other type of cell there are there that you're not supposed to be looking at, really. All right. And once you find a good example of an epithelium, then go up in magnification enough so that you can see the individual cells well enough to tell whether they're squamous, cuboidal, or columnar. Okay? So it's really just looking at everything, real slides. It's always best if you look at multiple examples of real slides because they're all different from each other. And this is all fair game for the practicum. A station on the practicum might be a printed picture of a slide, but you might have to actually look through a microscope at a real slide. So they're all different. You're not necessarily going to see exactly what you looked at. So it's important to make notes of what it is about this type of tissue that gives it its, what are its hallmarks, basically. All right. So look as much as you can here while you're here, but you can still definitely continue studying for this at home, because not only with the pictures in the manual and in the slides I gave you in lecture, but always remember to click on the links I give you for that other website, which is a good way of practicing for the practicum. Okay? Go ahead and do it.